Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be in Psalm 36. Have you ever been on a mountaintop, somewhere out in the wilderness, the smell of pines, big sky, the melodic music of a stream and not a care in the world? And then it hits you. I have to go back down this darn mountain, where all those jerks are? Pitted dread interrupts your mountain high. As you remember, you have to re-enter the concrete jungle and rejoin the rest of the mess of humanity as they continue to break the world. And frankly, you don't want any part of it. I picture David here in a clearing in the wilderness, perhaps in a meadow, with a stream running by, with grand views of majestic mountains, where David gets a message from God, an insight about the sinfulness of the wicked. Verse 1, he tells us, I have a message from God in my heart concerning the sinfulness of the wicked. There is no fear of God before their eyes. In their own eyes, they flatter themselves too much to detect or hate their sin. The words of their mouths are wicked and deceitful. They fail to act wisely or do good. God's revelation of wickedness outlines how they think in verses 1 and 2, and how they talk and act in verse 3. There is no fear of God before their eyes. In their own eyes, they flatter themselves, David said. If you've ever had something stuck in your eye, everything blurs, your vision distorts, and you can't see properly. The wicked could see the fear of God, another way of saying how awesome God is, if their own awesomeness weren't in the way. They flatter themselves too much to detect or hate their own sin. Dummies. Wait, I totally hate on him more, but actually sometimes that's true of me too. Never mind. Let's reread verse 3. The words of their mouth are wicked and deceitful. They fail to act wisely or do good. It's not just their eyes. They've also got a problem with their mouths. The words of their mouths are wicked and deceitful. Deceitful. Okay, so they don't see the truth about themselves. So in some ways, they're actually deceived and lying to themselves, which makes them lie to others. No wonder. If their thinking is out of whack, then it's not surprising that their words are also out of whack. You see, the Bible teaches bad thinking leads to bad living, so they fail to act wisely or do good, both day and night, according to verse 4. Even on their beds they plot evil. They commit themselves to a sinful course and do not reject what is wrong. So the problem with their brains, or how they think, leads to the problem of what they say and do. That's during the day. But when most of our brains are shutting down for the day, ready to sleep, David says their thinking causes them to ask the same question every night. What are we going to do, brain? Lying on their beds, their wicked thoughts respond. The same thing we do every night. Try and take over the world. They plot, scheme, and invent new ways of innovating sinfulness like mad scientists. They are the Teslas of treachery, the Edisons of evil, Oppenheimers of obscenity, inventing new forms of depravity when they should be sleeping. But it's never enough. Because wickedness is never content with itself. Sin never satisfies. It always hungers for more. And whatever evil they accomplish, it only increases their cravings for more. Think about it. What has sin ever given you that has lasting value? That gave more than it took? What passion did you ever indulge in that didn't just leave you hungry for more? No wonder they're always looking for more, for something new. But sitting in that meadow, listening to that stream, trying to take in the grandeur of that great blue sky above him, enjoying the peace of it all, David thinks about how content he is just with God himself, how there's always enough. In fact, like the overwhelm of his senses brought on by God's creation, David can't take it all in. He looks up to the sky in verse 5. Your love, Lord, reaches to the heavens, your faithfulness to the skies. With a smile on his lips, and joy in his heart. David knows that as big as the sky is, God's love for him is bigger. As grand as the heavens are at night, God's love knows no height, depth, nor width. It's just too much to take in. And it's good for us to take in God's love at this point in the psalm, because we are all sinners. Paul quotes verse 1 of this psalm in the book of Romans to remind religious people like us that the passage about sinners doesn't just describe them. It describes us too. We forget that we are sinners as well. We forget what Paul reminds us of, that we who judge others practice the same things. But luckily, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. David's saying, Lord, your love reaches to the heavens for loving a sinner like me. And reaching to the heavens, that's like saying to the moon and back. God's faithfulness or his commitment to us reaches to the skies. And that is to infinity and beyond. That's why everything of what David is about to say is big, like really big. Whereas sin causes a scarcity mindset where it's never enough, God gives David and us an abundance mindset. Verse 6, your righteousness is like the highest mountains, your justice like the great deep. You, Lord, preserve both people and animals. God's righteousness here is seen as an unscalable height, towering majestically above us. David, do you mean like the highest mountain, like Mount Everest? Yep. And God's justice, David, is it like the great deep? The deepest. Well, David, I know that's great news for us, but it's not really the best of news for the other guys in the beginning of this chapter. Nope, it's not, Peyton. But I'm not done, so keep reading. I told you I had a message from God, and I'm not done delivering my burden. Okay, sorry, David. It's just that I'm trying to do the sue the word thing here. Wait, you know what? Never mind. Continue. Verse 7. How priceless is your unfailing love, O God. People take refuge in the shadow of your wings. Priceless. That means nothing in the world can compare with God's love. Why? Because it's unfailing. God's love never stops. It never ends. Therefore, we can take refuge in the shadow of God's wings. God protects us and cares for us. Verse 8, they feast on the abundance of your house. You give them drink from your river of delights. For with you is the fountain of life. In your light, we see light. Sitting by a spring that never ceases, David knows that God's love, like that river, will never run dry. He will always have what he needs, God's love bubbling up from the ground, giving him the river of your delights. And I want to ask, when was the last time that something delighted you? The word delight is a type of word we use rarely for something that has lit up our entire being, like a new puppy. Or holding a baby, or remembering that one Christmas as a child that stands out above all others, where you came into the living room Christmas morning and there it was. There's not scarcity here, but abundance. David feasts on the abundance of God's house. And it may be that he's able to just reach out and pick a piece of fruit like a pomegranate or an olive out there in the wilderness and just eat it. He finds his surroundings to be like a Garden of Eden, where he has everything. In fact, not just everything, too much. Everything he needs for life and more. The sun providing light, lighting up his path. In your light, Lord, we see light. But the wicked, they walk in darkness. They can't see properly. But David has an oracle, a revelation, a message. He sees it all. Every bit of nature here, communicating to him what it was created for, to show him God's love and faithfulness. That's why he says earlier in verse 6, You, Lord, preserve both people and animals. It all communicates God's abundance of love. But David's not done. He makes a request. More of the same, please, he says in verse 10. Continue your love to those who know you, your righteousness to the upright in heart. May the foot of the proud not come against me, nor the hand of the wicked drive me away. See how the evildoers lie fallen, thrown down, not able to rise. As David makes his way back down the mountain, passing boulders and trees, wiped out by a storm, lying dead and motionless on the mountainside and on the valley floor, David descends the mountain path, ready to rejoin the massive sinners like himself. But there is one subtle difference. David sees God. He's been on the mountain with him. Continue your love to those who know you, he says. And by that, he doesn't mean that God may stop loving us. He means, God, as I descend this mountain, let me keep experiencing it. Mountaintop experiences are great, by the way. But the good news is that we can continue to experience God's love just by cracking open the Word like we did today and reading about it and reminding ourselves of His incredible, unfailing love that reaches to the heavens. But let's not forget, David knows that he's not any better than anyone else. Those evildoers, just like me and just like you, can still experience God's love at any time. There's enough to go around here for everyone. There's hope for everyone, after all.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.